the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto-related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
The Joburg High Court has ruled that cryptocurrency qualifies as both money and capital under South Africa's exchange control regime. Now, that may seem like a very technical distinction, money being something you exchange for something else and capital being stored wealth. What this court decision means is that crypto is subject to exchange control regulations. This decision directly contradicts a May 2025 judgment by the Pretoria High Court, which held that cryptocurrency falls outside the definition of both money and capital under the regulations. So we have contradictory judgments coming on top of proposed new exchange control regulations that have been slammed by many in the crypto community for overreach. Take, for example, you may be asked by a border agent for your crypto wallet password, and think about that for a minute and the potential for things to go badly wrong. We're joined now by Farzam Esani, who is really no stranger to us on the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast. He is CEO of crypto exchange Valour, to understand what's happening with all of these regulatory missiles that are flying overhead. Hi, Farzam. Good to talk to you again.
Lovely to be here, Kieran. Thank you for having me.
All right. Now, you've been critical about these proposed changes to the exchange control regulations, and we've got these two judgments, these contradictory judgments coming on top of that. So help us understand what's going on here and what impact this might have on the crypto community.
Yes. So, Kieran, we have these two court judgments, one in, from the Pretoria High Court that came out in May 2025, and the next one that came out in June 1st, just a few days ago. Now, they are at complete odds with one another because the Pretoria High Court judgment effectively said that crypto assets are not subject to exchange control regulations. There needs to be more regulation around what they are and how they are treated from an exchange control perspective. And the one that came out a few days ago from the Johannesburg High Court effectively said, this is, you know, Bitcoin is money, it is capital, and it is subject to exchange control regulations. The first one was a court between Standard Bank and the Reserve Bank, and the other one was between an individual called Mangudla and the Reserve Bank. So what complicates that further is, of course, that a few days before the judgment from the Johannesburg High Court on May 28th of this year, we had a joint statement between the Reserve Bank and the FSCA that effectively clarified that crypto assets, and including Bitcoin, are not money. And then, obviously, we've been looking at the draft regulations that have been published in the last couple of months. And those also explicitly state that crypto is not money. And it also explicitly states that it's not currency. So effectively, we have two courts with the same kind of stature that have opposing judgments. Also, regulatory clarification from the regulators themselves that are at odds with one or the other of these judgments. So what we're going to have to see is that, you know, the Supreme Court of Appeal is going to have to come in over here. And already the first court case from between Standard Bank and the Reserve Bank is going to be seen by that court, the Supreme Court of Appeal. And that court will no doubt have to reference both of these judgments and then make a final judgment on the two. So I think, you know, there's a lot of a lack of alignment across the judgments, across regulation. So, you know, one could look at this and say, goodness, what's going on? But if you take a step back, Kieran, we are actually at the cusp of creating, from in my view, great clarity and needed clarity for the industry. Up until now, the industry hasn't had the clarity that it needs. We at Valour, you know, we've been in existence for over 8 years now, and we've always spoken, we always engage with the regulators. And since before we started, we asked, what is the responsibility on Valour to report, for example? And what is the responsibility for crypto assets and crypto asset holders to comply with exchange control regulations? What does that look like? And we've always been told that the regulations will come and that we should wait. And so we have been waiting. So now that they're coming, finally, there is going to be some ugliness where we're trying to figure out what's right and what's wrong and what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. So the thing that I'm very excited about is that process has indeed started. but there's quite a bit of work so that we can get to a framework that actually makes sense for the crypto and asset industry, for the financial industry, and for South Africa as a whole.
Okay. Now, you mentioned that you've been engaging with the regulators for many, many years, I think. And now we've got these two conflicting court judgments and we've got these proposed exchange control regulations. I want to know from you, in terms of your engagement with the regulators, are they receptive to what the crypto industry has been saying? And what kind of clear framework would you like to see coming from the Reserve Bank and National Treasury?
Let's take a step back, if you don't mind, Kiran, because I think, you know, we're kind of focusing, and the entire industry and the entire country is focusing on these draft regulations. These draft regulations I've put on record, and I've done so publicly, they don't make sense to me. They're overly restrictive. They look at the externalization of value at the time of purchase. And the type of purchase, there is actually no movement of value on an exchange like Valour. It's literally just a ledger entry. So it really doesn't make sense. And also the amount of reporting that would be required and the amount of ingestion that the regulators would have to kind of take in, the amount of information and like getting through a whole bunch of noise just is not the right thing. And then also there's a bunch of requirements for declaration and things like when you bought the assets, how you bought the assets, where you're holding the assets. These also start to introduce a lot of security issues for people that are holding crypto assets as well, right? So then there's, you know, mandated declarations. Least of all, there's this determined threshold that is this kind of figure that we don't know what it is yet, below which everything is okay, above which nothing is okay, it seems. And there we need to be approvals and things of that nature. We don't know what that is, how much that is. So these are regulations, to be honest with you, that have been published without sufficient information for myself and the industry and the public to really have appropriate and informed commentary so that we can kind of come to a regulatory framework that makes sense for all of us. So that's the first thing I'll say. But I think we should take a step back and we should say, really, this is the first time since 1961 that we're really having an update to our exchange control regulations. All right. And this is also under the exchanges, the Currency and Exchanges Act of 1933. These are nearly a century old regulation. I think there is a lot of misunderstanding about where we are in today's modern economy and how those regulations relate to this modern economy. So, for example, there's a lot of discussion about the externalization of capital, the loss of capital to South Africa. And in a rand-based economy, there isn't any loss of capital to South Africa because every single rand, digital rand, and digital rands constitute 97% of all of our money in South Africa. They exist by virtue of living on the systems of a South African bank. And what that means is they cannot live anywhere else. They have to live in South Africa. So when people say, oh, we've externalized, say, a million rand, and let's say I had a million rand and I wanted to send some money offshore to pay for some hospital bills. While it's true that if I did that, that would be an externalization because I no longer have the million rand. Let's say I've bought dollars and I've sent dollars offshore. In order for me to do that, there has to be another party that sells me the dollars and buys my rands. And as a result, the rands just move from my ownership to somebody else's ownership. And there is no loss of capital to the economy whatsoever. Okay, this is a very important concept. So there's a lot of misunderstanding about this because also people talk about the FX reserves of the country that are getting impacted. And I say two things about that. Number one is that FX reserves really relate to what's held by the SARB and in some respects the National Treasury. The SARB and National Treasury do not intervene in the FX markets for regular purchases of private citizens. Okay, that's the first thing. And in fact, the SARB's stated, they've made some statements themselves that they've said actually intervening in the FX markets is not effective and it's very expensive. So we don't really do it anymore, right? And then the second thing is that, you know, for the past decade, we haven't had any regulations for crypto assets. And so conceivably, this would mean that our FX reserves are being depleted But actually, if you look at the data, our FX reserves are in some of the best positions that they've been in a long time in South Africa. So the question I always have is, what exactly are we trying to regulate here? What are the risks that we're trying to mitigate? We need to go back to first principles. And so what I've been saying very publicly is that I really don't believe that capital controls in general, forget about the crypto asset part, but capital controls in general don't serve South Africa anymore. So I am hoping that we can use this opportunity not to talk about crypto. Crypto is almost a red herring. But if we're going to make a big change to the 1961 regulations, let's update it into a regulatory framework that effectively helps South Africa enter the global economy, allows startups like Valor to compete in the global economy, allows investors to come and invest into South Africa without fear of their capital getting trapped, and much more. So that's the main thing that I would like to engage with the regulators on is, why are we doing this? Let's go back to the first principles. What are we afraid of? What are the risks that we're looking at? Because if it's AML risks, if it's fraud risks, if it's terrorist financing risks, if it's sanctions risks, all of those are being catered to with other regulations that we're already subject to. So exchange control regulations don't help those risks. So the question is, what risks are they trying to mitigate? And let's work together to mitigate those risks. But I don't believe it's a blunt exchange control paradigm. So that's just an overarching thing that I wanted to say. We have been engaging with the regulators. In fact, we've requested several meetings with the regulators. I believe that they are waiting for the comment period to be over, which is June 30th. And then I think that they will be meeting with certain people within the industry or having some meetings that are engaging industry is what I've understood post that date. And I look forward to that. And I think if I had it my way, right, there would be three things that I would do. Number one is not to put in these regulations into play. Number one is because even if today they went into play, there isn't sufficient information for us to actually understand what is being asked from us. What is the determined threshold? What are the reporting mechanisms? What are the reporting systems? We don't have that information yet. There are meant to be a draft manual that's meant to be published that has not been published yet. So we're waiting for that to be published so that we can see it, understand it, digest it, and then offer our constructive feedback on that. So the first one is we can't put these regulations in force because it's very difficult to even comply with them as they are right now. The second one thing that I would do if we were very brave as a nation is to say, let's really think about lifting XCON, right? And let's see what that would do to the economy, right? And then the third thing I would do is not just a blanket lift. It said, let's get reporting in place so that the regulators really understand all the financial flows. They understand what's going where, who's buying what, etc. So that there is no kind of misunderstanding about what is happening. And then the last thing I would do is to, if the SARB so want, or National Treasury so wanted, is to give emergency powers. Emergency powers to say, oh, if something goes wrong, we can go back to putting these restrictive controls on the flow of funds and money and capital. So that would be my hope. If we can't get there, then I would say then we look at kind of force fitting the exchange control regulations onto crypto assets. But what that would effectively mean from my perspective is that we have these controls where effectively funds, as the current draft regulations state, would have to go through authorized crypto asset service providers like Valor. We would have to report on those funds. There would be limits. But the main and important thing is that the policy should certainly make sure that the end consumer, whether they're a retail customer or a business, can choose for themselves whether they wish to use FX or they wish to use crypto, stable coins, or anything else, and that the reporting would be equivalent across both FX and crypto, and that the choice of technology to use would be left to the individual or the institution. Policy should certainly not get into the fray of what technology people should and should not use. It should be technology agnostic. And it should be really regulating the activity, not the technology itself.
Very interesting point. And I think you're not the first to raise this about, do we really need exchange controls in this day and age when technology is so far ahead of what the regulations actually are trying to achieve? And I guess one of the issues then for people who are in the crypto market is they're in this kind of limbo at the moment. They don't really know what what's coming. There's a lot of talk about this would create a sort of an underground market for crypto because people who are self-custodying their crypto, they could be asked by a border agent, as I said earlier, you know, we want to see what's on that flash drive of yours. Give us your password or give us your seed phrase that might be in your head. That, of course, raises huge issues constitutionally around free speech and rights to property. But I think from Valor's point of view and your interaction with customers, are you getting the sense that this people are generally very hostile in the crypto community to these proposed regulations?
There's no doubt that people are very upset about these regulations across the board. A couple of things, Kieran. You know, we've been engaging with the regulators for a decade. I personally have been engaging with the regulators for a decade. But it feels like something happened where these regulations were put out without consultation amongst the broader regulatory bodies that we've always been engaging with together. And they haven't taken the feedback of the countless days and hours and multiple workshops and engagements that the industry has had with the regulators. So there really isn't any of that, because I thought we had been making a lot of progress. But a lot of those things that seem to have been taken for granted or agreed upon, for example, you know, if we are going to impose exchange control regulations, it makes sense to do so at withdrawal from an exchange, not at the point of purchase. Because a lot of people are buying and selling and buying and selling. They're algorithmic traders, clearly buying and selling on the same platform that is a South African-based platform that has its infrastructure based in South Africa, that has a bank account based in South Africa, that doesn't use SWIFT to send any funds offshore. And at that point in time, there is no movement of any sort of value, whether you want to call it capital or not. Clearly, that's not the point to say that there's offshoring of capital, right, when you buy it. It's only at withdrawal. So this, I think, was quite clearly understood and agreed amongst the regulators and the industry. But then obviously there's been a reversion in the draft regulations that have recently been published. So I think there certainly is many people that are upset, right? Because we've been such a leader in the crypto asset space from a regulatory perspective. We have CASPs now, several hundred CASPs that are regulated by the FSCA. We are subject to, as accountable institutions, to all the regulations to do with AML and sanctions and money laundering and terrorist financing, etc., as the banks are. So all of that is in place. We have a large compliance team, fraud team, etc., and as do all the other major crypto asset service providers. So given that, though, I think we need to understand again where we are. And I always like to give the example of the red flag laws. The red flag laws are these laws that were introduced when the first horseless carriages were invented, i.e., you know, horses were not drawing carts. There was an engine. There was an automobile. And the regulators at the time did not know what to do. And so the first regulations that came out of the UK, actually, were these things called red flag laws. And what they required was that there would be an individual that would have to walk in front of the automobile with a red flag, waving it such that people knew it was coming and it would mitigate any risks of accidents. Okay. So obviously that wasn't the right regulation at that time, right? But you can understand the risks that the regulators were trying to mitigate at that time because there was a lot of unknown risks. And I think in similar fashion here, we have effectively got a set of regulations that really needs to be updated to be fit for purpose for the day and the age that we're in, for the crypto asset technology that we're using. And we're not quite there yet. But I think, and this is shown, right? This is not just my own opinion, but the fact that there are contradictory high court cases, the fact that there is a lot of ambiguity still in the draft regulations, it just shows that we've still got some way to go. So myself and Valor are very excited to hopefully contribute constructively to that process and what would make sense for South Africa, for financial stability, to take for economic growth, right? There are a whole bunch of considerations that we need to think about. But I'm really hopeful that we'll find a way to regulate the industry in a way that allows the industry to prosper, allow South Africa to prosper while also allowing our economy to be stable and more resilient.
Right. Farzam, final question. Very quickly, if you could. Let's just talk about Valor for a minute. You've got some rather interesting products that have launched. You're always launching products, but I've been following this. You've got an AI tool for market analysis. You launched that in March. Mm-hmm. And you've also got a Bitcoin and gold bundle, which is quite interesting as a hedge product. I'm sure that's what is partially designed to do. Tell us about these two.
Yeah, so of course, in the age of AI, which is a tremendously amazing technology, and might I add, going back to the previous questions, with exchange control regulations, this burgeoning industry of AI and agentic finance would root right past South Africa. There is no AI agent that's going to be stopping to fill out forms and things of that nature. So that's also one of the reasons that I hope that we can come up to speed and enter the global economy that allows players like Valor and others to really have businesses that can compete on a global scale in the AI space, rather than kind of being blocked out from the global progress that's being made. Having said that, you know, what AI's aspiration is, we already serve the retail customers, we already serve the institutions, and we've started to serve AI agents as a third pillar now. And so you can go and get a skill for your AI agent and effectively train your AI agent on how to use Valor to conduct transactions on your behalf, to do have bots on your behalf, to do a whole host of different things that may be required in the future. This is a really developing space. So the AI trading tool that you just saw is really the ability for customers to use AI to analyze the markets. You can also get a trade that is suggested to you. We also give big disclaimers because, of course, this is all in beta, AI makes mistakes, etc. But it is interesting to see what the analysis is of what the AI gives you. And in the future, we're actually going to be moving towards AI trading as well. So you can actually not just have just a suggested kind of trade, but you can actually have AI trading itself, right? So there's a whole beautiful world out there that one obviously has to be careful with the risks, but also has a lot of potential for a lot of more economic activity. And we've seen across the globe from large payments companies globally that there's a tremendous amount of effort that's being put into the AI space right now. Payments protocols that are trying to be considered and determined. And so we would really like to position ourselves at Valor in a way that is at the cusp of the transition of finance from where we used to be to where we're going, which is really one world with one internet, right? And with AI agents that will soon, I think, be able to do a whole host of things for you, to be able to potentially, you know, buy some milk for you when you're out of milk, and, you know, a sensor may go off and your AI agent will sense that and be able to buy some milk from the store and get it delivered to you, all without you really even knowing. So there's a lot that's possible over here. So that's very exciting. And we have a few more products in the offing, which I'm very excited about. You'll be able to get a lot of exposure to a whole bunch of different assets very soon. And that's all I'll say right now. And then also we're investing a tremendous amount in the payment space. So we're very, very excited about the clarity that I think this regulatory moment will give us, and about Valor's ability to really compete on the world stage, not only in the exchange space as we've been doing, but in the payment space as well.
Fascinating stuff. And we'll no doubt need to catch up on this because it's developing almost by the week. So, but we're going to leave it there. That was Farzam Hasani, CEO of Valor. Thanks very much for your time, Farzam.
Thank you, Kieran.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.